know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May 4th, 2018. I'm your host, Jillian Walters, and I'm joined here today by our control room operator, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
And our guest host, Caroline Carnery.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. We have an amazing show today. Live in the studio is photographer and artist Nancy Bleck, and soon to be on the phone is Dr. Kurt Russo, who are both going to discuss the incredible journey to bring Tokate back to her home. But first, we're still in the midst of our spring member drive here at Vancouver Co-op Radio. This is the time of the year when we ask you, our supporters, to please donate whatever amount you can to keep the show on the air. We provide original quality programming content every week, and we are all volunteer run. If you support Animal Voices, please go to www.cooperadio.org to make a secure donation, or call 604-684-8494 this week to make your pledge on the phone. As we are a registered charity, donations are tax deductible.
Yeah, so as I was mentioning on the show last week, we are all volunteer run here at Co-op Radio, and that's why we can provide the programming that we do, because we're not reliant on commercials to keep going, as most commercial radio stations are. And for that, what we trade in is that we're able to give you content that you're not going to hear on other radio stations. So Jillian, you weren't on last week's show, but we're still in our membership drive. It officially ends this week, but we are still, Co-op Radio, they'll still be taking in the donations and tabulating them until the end of May as to how much that we've made for this spring member drive. And every show for an hour long at Co-op Radio, we are a nonprofit registered charity. We have to raise at least $1,000 a year. So Jillian, I'm wondering if you can share, because I was sharing some of my highlights of past shows last year. What have been some of your highlights as being, you just started producing on the show about, what, like 7 months ago or six mm-hmm. months ago or so? And yeah. You've done a lot since then. What have been some of the highlights for you?
I think just focusing on the women in the movement and highlighting them and what they're doing. And I don't have a favorite.
Well,
do you?
Connie Spence comes to mind. Oh, yeah. When you're speaking about women. Batgirl, a.k.a. Batgirl. Do you want to tell us a bit about her work and what you talked to her about?
Yes. So Connie is from the States, and she's an Uber activist. And she projects, they call it the Batgirl light. And it projects a huge, like a Batman light. I think it's like 10 stories by 10 stories. It's massive. And she projects questions regarding veganism, and then people will see the light and stop and come and talk to her, and it's really non-invasive, like, and the people are not, it's not judgmental in any way, because they just want to answer the question, and then that begins the conversation.
And it can't be seen as vandalism because it's just a light.
Exactly. Which yeah. is very cool.
So I just felt really inspired by her, because she, as a woman, single woman, she's doing this on her own. She's got all this heavy equipment. She has to go out there into the city and like start setting all this weird stuff up, and people are looking at her and wondering what's going on. Then she probably has to deal with police and that. Mm-hmm. She's inspired to do this for the animals.
Right. And she puts it on... She started doing it on YouTube, or she's got a big channel now, so with lots of viewers on YouTube.
You said it's like a reality show.
Yeah,
watching
the people interact yeah. with her. She's had some really interesting experiences, and it's a must-watch YouTube show.
Yeah, so I mean, that's just one of the people that we've had on our show. Caroline, I'm so happy to have you back here at Animal Voices. You used to be, I think you need to put the mic closer to your face. I'm going to turn it off for a sec. Yes, you can adjust. Okay. Yeah, just, so I just want to point out that Caroline Carnery used to be one of our co-hosts, and you've come back to do a guest co-host spot this week. Thank you so much for coming back. What drew you back to Co-op Radio this week?
Well, I'm so happy to be here, and I was drawn in. I was sitting in a movie watching Directly Affected, who was directed, the film that was directed by Zach Embry.
Who we had on the show to speak to this issue.
And we got to talking, and Nancy mentioned to me this upcoming project, and I informed her that I was an animal rights activist, and I thought this was a great love story, as so did she. And I said, I want to talk about this. I want to bring this onto air. I want to spread this out. I want people to know about this. And here I am.
And we welcome you back.
Thank you.
You're able to have this platform at Co-op Radio because of our supporters. So it's because of our donors that we're allowed to have this airtime to share stories like we will be today, to share stories that affect people, the planet, and all animals. And yeah, if you support that, you really can't get this anywhere else in Canada, at least, you know. And we're a live radio show, and we podcast as well at animalvoices.org. So if you support the work that we do, please, there's someone taking phone calls right now. You can give a live person a call, 604-684-8494, and tell them that you would like to make a donation for Animal Voices. We would appreciate that so much. If you're a little bit shy and don't want to speak to a real live person, you can go on to cooperadio.org and make a tax-deductible donation there. And another type of donation that I really recommend is doing a sustaining membership donation, which is what I do. And you just have whatever amount you want taken out of your bank account every month, and it really helps us towards having guaranteed income for the year. So I have $5 a month taken out of my bank account, and I barely notice it. And I really recommend that that kind of support for a Co-op Radio membership / donation. So it's all the same thing. Like I said, we are a registered charity nonprofit, and we can really use any support that you want to give us.
And I was going to say, you don't have to be a host or producer on the show to be involved. We've got open ears, and we'd love to hear from people about suggestions or ideas for the show. So you can be part of the community without actually sitting with your headphones
on. That's a great suggestion. Contact us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com if you want to help out anyway. I have a lot of jobs that need to be done, and I'm delegating, so they're not all on the air. So we need people to do background work as well. There's always a long list. Thank you so much for that. So we have some news.
I've been following this since last year. I remember Kingston made a little YouTube video and sent it to all the senators asking them to please pass Bill S-203 for his Christmas present. So there's been a few stalls along the way, and I think there's some movement. I'm hoping it's going to pass. And if you don't know anything about Bill S-203, it's to end the captivity of cetaceans in Canada. We've got some events kind of on the same lines. Last year we did an Empty the Tanks over the overpass Light Brigade, over the overpass in Stanley Park heading towards the Lionsgate Bridge. It's a really cool event. If you want to come out and hold a lighted letter, you can do that. And it reads Empty the Tanks. People, you know, driving home from work or wherever, they can see it, and then they'll be like, Empty the Tanks, what's that? And they can look it up. And next Saturday is Empty the Tanks, and we are going to be at the Vancouver Aquarium.
And so now we're just trying to get Dr. Kurt Russo online, and he has worked with the Lummi Nation since 1978 in the area of treaty rights and environmental justice. In addition to his work with the Lummi Nation, he has served as one of the founders and the executive director of the Native American Land Conservatory and the Florence R. Clucon Center for the Study of Values. He received his PhD in history from the University of California. Also with us in the studio today is photographer and artist Nancy Black, who is co-founder of the Utsam Witness Project that connects wilderness conservation with First Nations culture, art, and social justice, and who will participate on a 3-member team documenting the journey of the Lummi Nation members in their quest to tell the story of Tokatay. the killer whale and advocate for her release. Now, Nancy, you have previously co-authored a book with Catherine Dodds and another individual. Can you tell us a little bit about that before we go on?
Sure. It was a book called Picturing Transformation,
Nakhoyansit, and it told the story of the 10-year project of Utsam Witness, and that was co-founded by Hereditary Chief Bill Williams, Talausum Kane Siam of the Squamish Nation, as well as John Clark, who's a legendary mountaineer who passed away in 2003, I believe it was. And so that documented a journey that was basically rooted in ceremony, and about 10,000 people participated in from 1997 to 2007.
Okay. Well, thank you. And now I think we have Kurt on the line. Are you there?
Yes.
Dr. Russo?
Hi.
Thank you for joining us.
No problem.
I have a lot of questions for you about a big blackfish. And so let's get some backstory on Tokate and trying to get her age right now, and then have you take us back to her capture in 1970. Who is her family pod? How did that capture go down? Who did it? Let's just stop there. That's a lot of questions. And then go on with what she's been doing since then.
Sure. Tokatai, who is also sometimes referred to as Lolita, is approximately 51, 53 years old. No one's quite sure. They believe she was 4 years old when she was captured in 1970 in Penn Cove at kind of the peak of the roundup years between 1966 and 1975, when blackfish were rounded up for sale to sea aquariums, marine parks, what we call sea circuses around the world. The roundup at Penn Cove, where she was taken along with many others out of her L pod, it's called the L pod of the southern resident killer whale population. They took a great number of young ones, 2 to 5 years old. About 8 adult whales were killed. A number of young ones were killed. It was brutal. There's actually video footage of it that we've seen. We have photographs. What you see if you were in Penn Cove is a frantic pod of killer whales being rounded up into pens, separated from each other. Some drowned because they were in such narrow spaces. And the matriarch coming out of the water and keening. Keening is the cry killer whales make when they're in distress. The people that live in Penn Cove today say they can still hear the haunting sounds of the keening that came from the females as they lifted out. Can you imagine? They lifted their babies out of the water and they were gone.
No, it's horrifying.
Gone. Completely. That pod has never returned to Penn Cove.
That pod, her family pod?
Yeah, the L pod has never returned to Penn Cove.
Now,
never.
You know where they are, though?
Yes.
Okay, and we're going to loop back around at the end of our discussion today to talk about Sea Pens and her family and her mother. And so all of these orcas were sold off to marine parks. Is that correct?
Yes.
And I understand that none of them are alive today.
They're all dead within 17 years.
All dead within 17 years. Tokate, now you're pronouncing it Tokata without the...
Tokate is fine. That's not her real name anyway.
No, it's... what is her real name?
She's going to be given her name by the tribe in the very near future.
And you don't know what that is yet.
Well, it's being given to her by elders that know how to find her true name, and there's going to be a ceremony around that, giving her her actual name. Tokatai was given to her by the veterinarian that was responsible for transferring her to Seaquarium, where she was then renamed as Lolita because she was placed in the tank with an older male. Yeah, well, you get the picture.
Yeah, we all get the picture. They were universal size here in the studio, and I'm sure our listeners are sighing right along with us. So, okay. So at this point, all the other orcas that were taken out of the sea at the same time or right around the same time, they're all deceased. They all died in marine parks.
Including the killer whale, the blackfish that was in the tank when they put her in there. Mm-hmm. That killer whale's name was Hugo. He committed suicide in 1980.
Yes, I understand from reading that he continued to smash his head in this stereotypic behavior into the side of the wall.
Correct.
And, you know...
Correct. And he was lifted unceremoniously out of the water, quietly by Seaquarium, and disposed of like just another piece of furniture.
I heard he was taken to the dump. So there you have it. So currently, Tokate means nice day, pretty colors in Chinook, but that's not her last name. So we'll stay tuned for the ceremony and the renaming of Tokate. And so now let's get down to the big campaign that you're about to undertake. To make the case for Tokate's release, you have this long journey with a very, very special Blackfish totem pole and other totem poles, and you're starting out in the Lummi Reservation in Washington State on Orcas Island. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then
that has been changed. You go Orcas Island. It's very difficult to get there with a totem pole. we're starting on the Lummi Reservation, actually.
Okay, fair enough. And so there's going to be a sacred ceremony. Thereafter, you wend down through a number of states, I think maybe seven or more, meeting with various people along the way and with other Native organizations, and then you head east through a number of states to arrive in Florida May 26th. So if you could give us the executive summary to our listeners about, you know, first of all, the mastermind of this journey, who I understand is Jewel James and the Master Carver, and what you hope to accomplish along the journey itself and the significance of the totem pole.
Yeah, well, the journey itself is, we actually arrive and we leave here, we leave Bellingham on the 10th of May. We arrive in Miami on the 22nd of May. And in between, we're doing events for the public, all but one, one's private, but all are public events. Everyone's welcome to come to interact with the totem pole and hear some really amazing speakers in Seattle and Tacoma and Portland and San Diego and Austin and Houston and Miami. These are major public events. In L.A., it's an invitation-only event to raise money for that is needed for her complete rehabilitation when she comes home. We're not bringing her home when we come back, when we leave Miami. Mm-hmm. On May 28th. This is part of her journey home. This is what we hope is the first of two legs that brings her home. Miami Seaquarium is not convinced yet that they should or need release her. Mm-hmm. We believe they will be convinced, and not just because of this journey. But this journey is, as Jewel James, who is the mastermind, and he's a master carver, and he's as humble as he is masterful, he said, this is all a prayer. Yeah, it's about science. It's about blackfish. It's about the sacred Salish Sea. But the whole thing is one long, and the Lummis have won major campaigns, including knocking out a coal port that would have denatured the Salish Sea. By doing the science, but doing it in a humble
and saying you can be the hero here. And that, and I certainly hope that works for her and for you.
It will.
Because, well done. So let's just say you're able to obtain the permit and you and Seaquarium decides to partner with you on this and be the hero. What happens next? There's a whole lot then.
There's a whole lot then. But I can say, going back to our website, tokate.org.
Yes, we're time limited. So
page, the entire return and rehabilitation plan is there.
Yeah.
exactly how we're going to do it, how we're going to get her to Bellingham, how we're going to get her to Orcas Island, how we're going to get her into a sanctuary, how she's going to be rehabilitated, and how she's going to be reunited. One last thing about that. She is not like other cetacea releases. She and Keiko are entirely different in every imaginable way.
Well, let's just stop for a moment and revisit Keiko. And I'm just going to cite a little bit of history for some of the people who may not be in the loop as much on what happened with Keiko, and then I'd love for you to come in and actually distinguish for us how they are really different candidates. Because there are a number of experts who have expressed very vocal concerns about whether Tokatay will be able to readapt to the change of the environment and assimilate socially with her pod. And they do cite the story of Keiko, who was captured in Iceland in 79, was released back to those waters in July 2002 after having lived in a sea pen for 4 years, following in his life a life in theme parks, basically performing exactly like Tokatay. He apparently died of pneumonia after his release in a fjord in Norway and in December 2003. And, you know, so during the time of his release, he was unable to connect with his family pod or any pod in a prolonged way. And, you know, and it's not even known if the pod from which he was taken was a resident pod or a transient pod, or if his family was even killed in the capture. So he was put out there, and I'll let you take it from there.
Thank you. Yes, and it's really important. This is really important that people that love animals, as I know your listeners do and as we do, we would not be doing this unless we knew she's going to be fine. Believe me. Keiko, when Keiko was taken, we actually have had conversations with the individual who was most involved in the early stage of her return. Keiko was taken to a place where they didn't even know where her pod was. They just dropped her in an area where they're known to be killer whales.
Mm-hmm.
Her family wasn't there. And killer whales are very relational. So, of course, the pod that she kept intersecting with was not her pod. Mm-hmm. So they would take her out when they call it take her out on walks, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'd walk her out to the pod, they'd watch, and they'd come back. And then in the middle of all that, the people of the team that was working on this changed. So the ones that really knew how to read Keiko's body language were moved out of the project.
I see.
Meanwhile, she's in the water with strangers.
Right.
Or he is, Keiko.
Yeah.
Now let's look at Tokatay. We know exactly who her pod is. It is the L-pod. We know that. The L-pod routinely circulates around and into East Sound, where Tokatay's sanctuary is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
That is her pod's resident waters. We know that for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not being dropped among strangers, first of all. And the pod, and the area where she's being placed, there is a king salmon hatchery.
Mm-hmm.
She has room service.
Mm-hmm.
So there is food. It is safe. It is large, 80 feet deep. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful sheep pen area we're going to create for her. And her pod goes up into East Sound and around. So that is, when they take her for a walk, that is her pod, and there's reason to believe her mother's still alive.
Yes, I was reading that her mother is called, what is it, something son, and that she would be about 90 right now.
They can live to 100.
So these are long-lived animals.
Mm-hmm. The females are.
Right. And so if we look at this, and let's just say that Tokatay was released at 54 years old, and she could conceivably live until 100.
Yes.
This would be a very, very strong case to be made for this move. And even if she were to adapt very, very slowly over time, that's half a century to adapt. And we're so welcome to, you know, to agree and to come on side with the fact that the human brain is plastic, even after catastrophic brain injuries or traumas. We can teach our, or even deprivation, we can work with our brains, teach our brains through successive approximations and failures and trying again to adapt. And none of us have any reason to believe that that Tokatay's brain is any less adaptive in the long term than that.
Or remembrance, because she sings her pod song nightly. Still, when they went to the side of her tank in 1998 with the recording of the L-pod, and they played it, she leapt out of the water. She leapt out of the water within inches of the guy's face who was holding tape recorder. She spy-hopped the water and was shaking. That's all in the trailer, you'll see.
Oh, I've seen it, and I really encourage anybody who has doubts about whether these songs are remembered. She was out of the water. She was in the person who was holding the microphone. Yeah. She couldn't get close enough, and she kept coming up, and the people who were on site watching this happen said that she was just shaking. Mm.
Yep.
And so I'm wondering if any of her songs have been taken back to the pod to be played to them.
Well, we would love to do that if Sequarium would let us.
Oh, wow.
But, you mean, she has been heard. Now, the people that heard this, the people with Orca Network, they are strongly convinced she is actually... What they are hearing is very similar to what the L-Pod song. Remember, they have more than one song.
Mm-hmm.
Pods do. Depends on what they're doing. So if they're calling out to each other, that's one. And they can hear each other 10 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she may think, this is interesting, why is she the last surviving wild orca in captivity in North America?
What's your theory on that?
Well, it's not my theory, but it's one that I believe is a good one. She's in an open pen close to the water. She's on a key in Florida. Mm-hmm. She hears the water.
Mm-hmm.
There's a body of water nearby. There are killer whales in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. She may think her family's not far away.
Oh, interesting.
Because, remember, think about this. 47 years, basically alone, sings her song nightly.
Yeah.
So she remembers, we are, and the people, the traditional knowledge keepers are working with us. There is no doubt she's going to be fine. We just have to get her home.
Just have to get her home. And then, so there are some people, you know, when you get her home, that are saying, okay, we've got the possibility that she may be bringing pathogens with her, that her pod family might have pathogens, which may contaminate her, and her immune system might not be up to the task of taking these on. We're dealing with PCBs, we're dealing with high mercury content, and we're dealing with traffic. What do you say there?
Well, there's a lot in that question. We're working with people who work with killer whales, with blackfish. Mm-hmm. And to that question, they said, first of all, before anything is done with Tokatay, we will have veterinarians go in there and do a thorough evaluation. She's on medications.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them. She's in chlorine.
She's in chlorine.
She's in a chlorinated tank. So she's on medications. Mm-hmm. So they will do a thorough evaluation to see what kind of rehab would have to be done before she is removed and taken back to her home waters. So they would do a complete analysis, because we can't get into doing analysis. But they are convinced from looking at her that she's vital and vigorous and healthy, just from watching her behavior. When no one's around, she races around the tank.
Mm-hmm.
Still, she's very lively, she's very energetic. Enough said about that. We don't believe there's a problem, but we do a thorough analysis. We do know the situation with her pod, and there's nothing that her pod has that, insofar as we know Tokatay's full health, that would endanger her.
Mm-hmm.
As to the toxins, that's primarily a concern for younger blackfish.
Mm-hmm.
She's 50-some years old. The toxins that she would... Yeah, sure, the Sailor Sea has got a lot of toxins in it. At her age, that's not an issue so much as it is for the young ones.
Mm-hmm.
And a postmenopausal female has a very important role to play in the killer whale pod.
Mm-hmm.
It is their job to help find food.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing they do. They're matriarchal.
Yes.
Well, you could say, well, she doesn't know where the food is. But she does. Because she is going to be given a sanctuary where there is a king salmon hatchery.
Ah!
So she's almost like a liaison. She's used to being around people. So people can bring her back to her sanctuary, and she brings her pod with her, because that's her job. Now, we can say she's 4 years old, she's 51 years old. Killer whales are not the same as us. There's a whole different kind of brain here that's dedicated to social relations. She will know her role. It's like muscle memory. She will learn what she already knows.
Yeah, it's hardwired in there.
It's an important role. We are very cognizant of that, and I have to say again, the Lummi people, the Lummi Nation, the elders, would not be doing this unless two things were true. They feel she is at great risk where she is for a couple of reasons. First of all, her performance life is coming to an end. What are they going to do with her? Put her in the back pen because she dies. Second of all, and related to that, she's in an absolutely toxic environment there. She's not supposed to be in the sun all day long. She's supposed to be in the northwest.
Right.
And second of all, the nature and intensity of hurricanes are increasing in southern Florida.
Yes.
If Irma had hit Miami head on, she would be dead.
Yes, her tank is not protected.
It's not totally not protected. And so, first of all, that's the second thing is, we know from what we understand of her situation and the knowledge keepers, she is much safer here than she is down there. Bottom line.
Okay. Talk to us about the money, because transporting vet care, feeding sea pens, ongoing care, potentially for, you know, there's several scenarios here. One, that she integrates fully and sails off into the sunset with her pod. One, that she integrates partially and still returns to the base station and is, and one that she is fully dependent on people and the sea pen and the food there and does not reintegrate with her family.
Right.
So this could be a very short care proposition or a very long-term one,
or
maybe
very
up to 50 years.
And of course, the short-term proposition is a three-year proposition. $3.5 million is needed. We're already raising money for that. That is the return to her water, her rehabilitation in her water, and reuniting with her family. 3 years, $3.5 million. Now, the long term, when we begin the campaign of bringing her back, there's going to be established a Tokatai endowment. And I can assure you, well, I don't know if you've ever been out to the San Juan Islands. There are a lot of people in the San Juan Islands that have two things: a great love for killer whales and a great deal of resources. We have no doubt we will have the money we need for both phases. First of all, $3.5 million phase, but if it's in perpetuity for 50 years, it's not. It seems like a tall mountain. It's not. It's not a tall mountain, but it's got a great view. If she was to be there in that sanctuary for the rest of her life, she would attract people from all over the world to come watch her.
I couldn't agree more. So you feel confident that the funding is going to be there, and it sounds like that may very well be the case.
One of my jobs is to raise money. So like in the last 20 years, I've raised about $20 million for things like this. Whatever's needed, we raise. I mean, because they're inspired endeavors.
Because I do understand that Keiko's relocation and taking care of him was about $20 million U.S. So it does get up there. Now let's just talk about what it would feel like to complete the obligation. I'm told that the Lummi Nation, for the Lummi Nation, this is a sacred obligation to bring Tokatai home. Would you say that satisfying, what would you say that satisfying that duty would mean to the Lummi Nation?
Well, let me paint you a picture, and you can tell me what it inspires in you. There's going to be a moment in the Salish Sea when a blackfish named Tokatai, but with a real name, goes out on a walk, and she's going to find her mother. And they are going to reunite, and they are going to literally leap out of the water, because that's what they do when they find each other. And they're going to leap together out of the water and be reunited. The Salish Sea will never look the same again to anybody. It will be that moment memory. That will be the moment people will remember what they were doing that day. It's that sacred.
Yes.
That's the nature of the moment we're talking about. And it's a moment everyone is going to share.
Yes, well, there would be tears around the world when that happens, truly.
Of course.
And tears in here. We're tearing up in this studio right now.
Recognizing they have agency and personhood.
Absolutely. And would it, if that didn't happen, and she did not connect with her pod family, or she was not accepted by them, and she had to live her life out in the sea pen in home waters, would that still constitute a success?
Yes, it would, because she's home. She is home. And also, she will still be, wherever she lives, if she lives, she chooses to stay in her sanctuary and not join her pod for whatever reasons she might have, she will still be, remain the ambassador for the Salish Sea, because she's home.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Sadly, that is all the time we have today with our guests. I could sit here and talk for many, many more hours about this topic and others. So we wish you all the best in your fulfilling your obligation to bring Tokate home. And to find out more information, you can visit www.sacredsea.org and make sure to check out the Animal Voices page for links. We also put the link for A Day in the Voice, a Day in the Life of Tokate, which is an 8-minute video, which pretty much says it all. And so check out the Animal Voices pages. And again, Dr. Russo and Nancy Black, thank you for taking the time to be with here to us today at Animal Voices and to share the story of Tokate and the quest to do right by her. We wish you every success in this heartfelt totem pole journey.
Okay, so I am a little bit emotional right now. Wow, where else can you find that kind of information?
What a story.
I like the truth, right? And the deep, deep spiritual truth. And I'm just so moved right now, I can barely talk. Mm-hmm. I'm in my head, I'm already planning May 10th. Okay, what day is it today? I'm like planning my route and jumping in the van and following the journey. So, wow.
Yeah, thank you so much, Caroline, yes, for coming into the station and facilitating this interview today.
Well, it was just such a joy to be here. And, doing the research for this piece and having to watch the videos that we all hate to watch about the capture and just how violent it is. Mm-hmm. And they don't kill how matter. They don't care how many they kill. This is just a mercenary, greedy project to get these animals into these circuses so that they perform two shows a day. And if they don't perform the shows, they don't eat food. So they are slaves. They are manipulated from the time they get up until the time they go to sleep.
And I really hope this makes people think about animals used as commodities in our world.
And
these
as property.
These are animals used, as you said, slaves. They are exploited. Jillian, you're writing a 6-part book series on all the kinds of animal exploitation there is. This is one of them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when you're going to a seaquarium or whatever, and maybe...
To support those types of initiatives.
Thank you.
And there's still animals at the aquarium, by the way, who are being held in captivity.
Yes.
So they have two walruses there right now.
That were bred for purpose to come in. These were not rescued animals. They were bred for the purposes of never being in the wild environment, but to be brought in and shipped over here to sit in front of people and to do tricks for food, like clap their hands together.
Yeah, and I remember going to the Vancouver Aquarium and watching the penguins sliding down the slide and watching the dolphin show. So it's phasing out, and it's phasing out because of initiatives like this, I think, that are going to really raise people's awareness and realize that these are someones, not some things.
And also the whole notion of bringing her back to her ancestral waters creates an awareness of the health of those waters and getting those fossil fuels and plastics out of the ocean so that we can also have
That's
a healthy...
That's another huge issue.
Well, and if we don't have that connection to, you know, the whales, the fish, the sea life, then we will stop caring for it. So having that relational mm-hmm. aspect to, you know, the human and the animal is so vital and important for recognizing the health of where we live.
People need to understand that everything on our planet is interconnected.
Exactly.
World Oceans Day is coming up on June 8th, and I hope to feature that topic on that upcoming show.
Yeah.
So getting back to, again, we are coming to the end of our show here. If you do support the work that we do, especially this wonderful interview that we just had, that really just tells a story. I mean, Kurt was saying he wants to give the animals voices, and I thought that's what we do here on the show, right? Because you can't hear the voices of the orcas under the water because they're out of sight, out of mind, or they're in the tanks. People aren't listening mm-hmm. to their voices. People aren't people aren't giving them a chance, and that's what we here at Animal Voices endeavor to do. So once again, I'm getting back to, this is our spring member drive. If you support the work that we do here at Animal Voices mm-hmm. as a nonprofit registered charity, we're all volunteers here. The station itself is run by a very minimal amount of staff, about 4 staff or so, and our annual budget is about $200,000 a year, which is sometimes the salary of one person at a commercial radio station. So we do it all for it's a great deal. So please give us a call, 604-684-8494, if you want to make a pledge over the phone right now. And we're continuing unofficially the member drive. I mean, you can donate at any time. If you don't have the money or the capacity right now, keep it in your mind for next month or 6 months from now, whenever you can, or when you can make a donation, we would really appreciate it. And you can also go online at cooperadio.org also to make your tax deductible donation. So yeah, well, thanks again for a great show.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. If you have an animal-friendly event that you'd like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Please join us on our next show, Friday, May 11th, 2018, where Anna Pippis will talk about vegan parenting and pregnancy. We are closing the show with Tokate, You Will Be Free by Lynn Vendekin. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.